This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Author Lee Smith is closely identified with Southern writing, and her latest novel, Guests on Earth, takes place right here in North Carolina. Set in Asheville at Highland Mental Hospital, the book chronicles the experiences of a young female patient who is a piano prodigy. The lines between fiction and nonfiction are blurred, and the narrator encounters characters who are both real and created. And Lee Smith joins us today to talk about Guests on Earth. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you so much, Frank. I'm delighted to be here.
This is a book that is very close to you in terms of the character, the content, and the place. Tell us about that and about your connection with the hospital itself.
Well, it's a book actually that I have known I would write since the late 1980s. First, I know the hospital like the back of my hand, I have to say, because my father was there in the 50s. One of my favorite memories is dancing with my daddy at a tea dance at Highland Hospital when I was, I guess, 11. But then, several decades later, my son Josh was there as he battled schizophrenia. And he was there for, I guess, 2.5 years, and they turned out to be very helpful years. But there was a moment while he was there that is really the genesis for this book. And since that moment, I have always known I would write it. And first, we have to say that Zelda Fitzgerald died there in the most horrific hospital fire that's ever happened in this country. And I knew that. I was always crazy about Scott and Zelda, reading about them. And so I took my many visits up to Highland to see Josh as an opportunity to learn everything I could about the fire itself and so on. I was really interested. Zelda was one of 9 women who were in a locked ward on the top floor of one of the buildings, locked for their own safety because they had had insulin shock that day. So anyway, here's what happened. Josh and I were walking up Zillicoa Avenue there to the beautiful mountaintop hospital. Winter day, brilliant red winter sunset behind the crenellated roofline of Homewood, one of the, you know, most interesting buildings there. And that red behind the roofline made me think of all those women who had perished in that fire. And then, just at that moment, another thought came into my mind because I was also reading the collected love letters of Scott and Zelda. And he had written to her. He was very upset because while he was in New York earning the money to marry her, she was back in Montgomery, Alabama, being a belle and having about 6 dates a day. And so he wrote to her. He said, now I know why they keep princesses in towers, because he was so jealous. And she wrote back, Scott, you're so nice to write, but this is the 6th time you've said that in your last letters. And so she was really mad at him for keeping on about that. But suddenly, to my mind, into the vision of the fire came also the vision of the imprisoned Southern princess, because she would be imprisoned by so many things. And I thought, okay, this is a novel, and I'm going to write it. It's taken me a long time, but here it is. Here we go.
And it's a wonderful novel, and we get a picture of what was going on in your head, but I want to see the graphic moment, the graphic picture inside Lee Smith's head when all of these monumental kind of mythic themes of the imprisoned princess, the belle who cannot be contained, who becomes Zelda Fitzgerald, and all of her, you know, and this real-life fire. I mean, tell us about the fire.
Yeah, well, the fire itself was set. And they know it was set. It was set in the kitchen, which was on the bottom floor of the building in which it happened. It was set. It rushed up the dumbwaiter, leaping out on every floor until it got to the top floor in no time at all. And, of course, everything was made of wood. There was no sprinkler system. It's 1948. There was no sprinkler system. And even the fire escapes were made of wood. So everybody on the top floor perished horribly. And as soon as it started, you know, staff and townspeople came rushing up, you know, the mountain there and got as many of the other patients to safety as they could.
Tell us about your narrator, Evelina Toussaint.
Okay. Well, I was trying to think of a narrator who would be present and be active in the lives of many of the other characters. And so Evelina is a 13-year-old orphan from New Orleans, Evelina Toussaint All Saints. Her mother was an exotic dancer and a courtesan, a kept woman, fancy woman by a cotton broker. When her mother kills herself, the cotton broker doesn't know what to do with this child who won't eat and won't stop crying. And so she is sent up to Highland Hospital to be a ward of Dr. Carroll, as so many people were. I mean, you could literally live at that hospital. And I made her a piano prodigy because she could be the accompanist for all of the many, many theatricals and concerts and dances that were honestly and truly taking place all the time at Highland, because art therapy was a big part of the program. So she was privy to the secrets and the stories of all the other patients.
And she comes and goes in the period that Zelda Fitzgerald
is
there.
She does. She arrives in 1936, at the time when Zelda arrives, and she's gone, but back again as a staff person when the fire happens in 1948.
And now tell us about Dr. Carroll.
Dr. Carroll was fascinating. And you know what? I didn't change a thing. I didn't invent anything about Dr. Carroll. I just learned as much as I could about him. He was the person who really invented occupational therapy. He had the idea that crazy people shouldn't sit around just being crazy. He said, let's do something. And so he had his patients walking 5 miles a day. He had them doing all the gardening. Hortotherapy is what he called all this. They had a greenhouse. They built things. They did everything. They also danced and sang and put on musicals and had wonderful art, wonderful painting, and all of these things. So, and I have a great picture of him bounding forth from the forest wearing tights and little boots and a little doublet. He was a character himself in Midsummer Night's Dream, because townspeople and staff were participating in all these theatricals and events.
Will you read for us?
I would. I'd love to.
Maybe you can read right from the beginning. We'll get a sense of...
Okay, this will get that. We'll get a sense here of Evelina's voice, because she is telling these events after the fire, after they have all happened. And she says, for years, I have intended to write my own impressions of Mrs. Zelda Fitzgerald, from the time I first encountered her when I was but a child myself at Highland Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina in 1937. And then, a decade later, during the several months leading up to the mysterious tragedy of 1948, I bring a certain insight and new information to this horrific event that changed all our lives forever, those of us living there upon that mountain at that time. This is not my story, then, in the sense that Mr. Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby was not Nick Carraway's story either. Yet Nick Carraway is the narrator, is he not? And is any story not always the narrator's story in the end?
Lee
Smith. So that's our Evelina.
Guests on Earth is the title of Lee Smith's latest novel. And of course, Zelda Fitzgerald is someone who escapes. And I think this is one of the important themes, one of the many important themes in the novel, this idea of a kept woman, the role that women had to perform of the bell. And Zelda's
absolutely
honoring this in The Breach.
Yes, absolutely. And as I researched the hospital itself and all the people who had been sent there and what their diagnoses were and how they were treated, I began to realize that a large number of these were women from the deeper South who were simply a little too creative,
yeah,
or a little too intelligent, or just did not fit in with their husbands' or family's ideas of how a lady should behave.
Dixie is one of those characters.
Dixie,
I wonder if I can get you to read again,
sure,
unless you need to set it up some more. But we'll get a pretty good feel of Dixie and sadly why she may have been sent there.
Okay. Well, this is our Evelina speaking, narrating, and she is talking about her friend Dixie, and she's there at the Overholzer's house. This is a couple who live there. The Mrs. Overholzer is a teacher, and he is too. Okay. This is Evelina. I had trouble believing that Dixie had never been to college, for she seemed to know everything about everything, not only painting, but books, too. She and Richard Overholser fell into long literary conversations whenever we went over to their house for dinner. I especially remember one Saturday night when I was helping Claudia clear the dishes while he and Dixie discussed existentialism, quote, a philosophy that emphasizes the uniqueness and isolation of each individual in a universe that doesn't give a damn, as Richard explained it to me. I had never heard of it. So, he added, each person is solely responsible for giving his own life meaning and for living that life passionately and sincerely, he finished up. But what about God, asked I, the product of all those nuns. He doesn't exist, Richard proclaimed. It's all up to you girls. Well, that's sort of what Hemingway is saying, isn't he? Dixie said. Well, yes, an even better reading choice would be Albert Camus. Albert who? Dixie already had her pencil out. C-A-M-U-S. And look here, Dixie, he added in his emphatic northern way. Why not enroll in some college courses when you get back to Georgia? You'd enjoy them. Be damn good for you, too, I'll wager. Now, Richard, you know that's not allowed. We're not supposed to get involved here or make suggestions. Claudia tossed over her shoulder as she headed back to the kitchen. Well, why not? He pounded on the table. This is a brilliant woman. Why shouldn't she go to college, for God's sake? Oh, no, Dixie said quickly. Frank wouldn't like it. I perked up. Dixie never, ever mentioned her husband's name. A, she said, there's no college back home for miles and miles around, assuming he'd let me go at all. And B, you know that's not the proper purpose of therapy at Highland, don't you? That's not why he sent me up here. I am being re-educated, retrained. Though she used a mimicking voice, her smile was sweet and resigned. Retrained for what? Richard pushed back his chair. For marriage, I guess, Dixie said. I wasn't very good at it before. Richard picked up the serving plates and abruptly left the table. You know what I think of all that? He called back over his shoulder. Well, Dixie said calmly, vacantly, playing with her beautiful hair, she looked away into some distance we couldn't see.
Lee Smith reading from Guests on Earth. Among the many things I like about that passage is the way, you know, you are so brilliant at capturing the cadences of the South. And when it's interrupted with that academic northern
cadence,
it's subversive. It's like, no, there's a new message here in Dixie.
Right, and of course, that's the voice of reason, but that's not why. Her husband, who is a beloved husband, you know, there's the central unsolvable dilemma.
And
center there.
And the therapy there, I mean, talk about we're not supposed to get involved, but the involvement of the therapy is to retrain you into becoming
Dr. Carroll wrote many books, which I have all read. One of them with the wonderful title, The Mastery of Nervousness, and then Becoming the Victorious Soul. And, you know, all of these, it's like a battle. And I think he really did not believe in talking therapy, Jungian, Freudian, anything. He didn't believe in introspection. And the idea here was to keep you busy and have you organized, you know, and on a real schedule. And you know what? That was pretty helpful, too. Just getting away from your family can be really helpful.
Being busy, being active, but also performing roles that are traditional roles, right?
Right. Yeah.
Rehearsing these things. You talked about your father was there and your son, Josh, who you lost recently. How was this difficult for you, a difficult book for you to write?
Well, it did take me. I always, as I said, I knew I was going to write it since the late 80s. But after Josh was there for several helpful years, he was then better. He got on clozapine. He was living a really productive life, taking care of himself very well with his own, you know, with his own physicians and doing his own meds and everything in Chapel Hill. And then, very sadly, he died. He had a heart attack when he was 34. So at that point, this became very charged material for me. And it took me a while. But then I found that it was good to revisit this place and good to come at it with sort of all the emotion I brought to it at that point. And it was writing is therapeutic. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the only reason I'm not in a place named Highland Hospital, I guess, because writing is a therapeutic activity. And I loved writing this book. I loved these characters. They really sprang to life.
Yeah, you brought to it more emotion than you might have because of the time span, the time between. How about the experience? I think about bringing to life and making fictional characters of Zelda Fitzgerald. This is a difficult thing, and you do it. Because we don't want a memoir. We don't want a biography.
Making
living biographical figures into literary figures takes a lot of experience, it seems to me. You do it beautifully here. Could you have done this earlier in your career?
No, I don't think I could have done it. And also, as I say, I have spent years reading everything that Zelda and Scott Fitzgerald wrote and reading everything about them and Dr. Carroll and the other, Nina Simone. I mean, the other real characters who are really in this, you know, in here. And so my rule that I had for myself was that I would never have them do or say anything that I was absolutely sure they would not do or say. But Zelda, you know, I love Zelda, and her own voice is really the most memorable in American literature. She herself, her own writing was more like Virginia Woolf with this mix of sensory image and so on. So it was a great thrill to just write a few letters that were
such a wonderful
hers.
Book. And Lee, always such a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Lee Smith will be speaking on December 10th, Park Road Books in Charlotte. Her latest book is called Guests on Earth. And that's the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a program produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Bryson Russell is our intern. Robin Copley is our technical director. And Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.